Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And before I jump all into the show, I do want to brag a little bit. Kind of want to blow my own trumpet here, blow my own nose. I'm going to brag a little bit. This past week or so, I can't remember exactly. It doesn't matter. I went to Six Flags Great America, you know, the amusement park. I went there to the one near D.C. And when I was there, I rode the rides, capital R-O-D-E. I rode the rides like a champion. I haven't been to an amusement park in ages, and I really wasn't sure what to expect when I heard that I was going to be going. You know, I was a little bit worried that it was going to be a lot of girly giggles and girly screams coming out of my mouth. That would not have been something that surprised me. But in this instance, by the time I was on my third ride, that's it, just my third ride, I was already climbing onto the biggest roller coaster they had in the park. It was the Ride of Steel, the Superman ride. And let me tell you, as we ascended into, you know, the atmosphere, as that thing just went up and up and up, I could hear people all around me screaming in terror. Literally, I kid you not, these people were in the prime of their lives and they were freaking out. You know, young people, elderly people, but healthy ones. You know, everybody freaking out. The people next to me, in front of me, behind me, everybody's upset. They're hollering, they're screaming, they're having fun, but they are terrified in the process. I, on the other hand, I was utterly without concern or fear. I was calm and cool as a cucumber. And there are not many times in my life, I don't know that there's been any times in my life, that I can say that in a large group of people, I was the cool one. You know, I can't even think that in a small group of people, I've ever been the cool one. I'm not even sure if I was alone in a room, if I'd be the cool one. You know, that's how it rolls for me. But in this instance, I was the cool one. I was a real-life superhero on a superhero ride, all right? So that's the amazing, cool thing that I wanted to brag about. Now, there's a little bit of info you need to fill in some of the gaps here so it all makes sense. And that's this. When we would get on a ride, before they would let us get on, you know, climb into that coaster, we had to put all of the things that we could drop. We had to put all of those things into bins. So our phones, you know, hats, all kinds of stuff that we could be scattering throughout the park, they wanted in bins. And for me, that meant my glasses. And it just happens to turn out that I am so nearsighted that the reason I was so brave and so without fear is really just because I couldn't see anything. You know, the world around me, the entire world around me, was a soft, satisfying, utterly safe and embracing blur. You know, I didn't have the same experience of dizzying heights because I can't see 4 foot beyond my face. Now, it is kind of funny. A few years ago, a couple years back, I guess, I noticed that I can't smell certain smells. And I've joked on the show here that that is my superpower. You know, that if there's ever a bunch of children trapped in a building surrounded by skunks, you could call me and I could walk right in, no worries, and rescue the children. Now I can contribute my fearless experience with terrifying heights to my terrible vision. It's like all my senses are diminished, and that's what makes me powerful. That's my superhero gig. You know, I'm diminished man or something like that. Anyway, that was my week, you know, last week or so, and I thought it was kind of funny. I hope you all had a good week, but that's enough of all of that. Let's get to the show. And this week, I've got really quite a mix. Coming up at the end, I'm going to be talking about how to pick the right front door color. You know, front door color, it sets the tone for your home. I think that's true. It certainly makes a statement. And you want to make sure that the statement you're setting is the right statement. And you can do it wrong, and we don't want that. So I'm going to help you do it right. I've got some things to think about as you're choosing that color. I'm also going to be launching a new segment that I'm calling My Favorite Things. You can cue up the Sound of Music soundtrack. I'm going to regale you with some random home improvement things that I've been enamored of for the last few weeks or so. They're not big enough on their own to be their own segments, but I can sure mush them together and make one segment out of them. They're good things. You're going to like that. It's just a lot of fun, and I still think it's really practical. So that's coming up. I'm also going to be talking about a new product that we're making at Repco Light, our deck Black & Dock Waterborne Deck Stain. Now, I talked about it briefly a couple of weeks ago when I talked about decks in general. And this time, this week, I want to dig into it more deeply. I used it on my own deck, and I've got a lot that I want to say about it. And I'm going to get to all of that coming up next. But right now, in the time that I've got left, I want to talk about vacuums, specifically bagged versus bagless vacuums. You know, which system is better? See, I'm in the market for a new vacuum right now, and I figured it was a no-brainer that the bagless vacuum system, right, the new modern thing, that's superior. It's got to be to the old bagged technology. But is it? It actually might not be the case. I dug into it, and I was really surprised. So I'm taking that info to you right now. Let's look at both different types of vacuums in terms of a few key categories and see which one seems better. All right, first category I want to look at, let's start with dust collection and retention. Now, when it comes to bagged vacuums, the bag doubles as a high-capacity filter. It's trapping fine dust and allergens in it as it fills. And this makes them really great at keeping the air clean, especially in homes with allergy sufferers. So bagged vacuums really good in that regard. Bagless vacuums, they use something called cyclone technology and secondary filters, you know, a combination of the two, to capture dust. Top models, you know, that is the more expensive ones, they can perform almost as well as bag vacuums in this regard. But your average run-of-the-mill bagless vacuum, the one that I would buy, is not going to be as good when it comes to dust collection and retention. On top of that, whether you buy a top-tier or mid-range bagless vacuum, the filters are going to clog up and they need to be cleaned regularly or the dust collection and retention is going to drop. So, surprisingly, at least to me, bagged vacuums take the lead when it comes to better dust capture, especially when you're talking about fine particles and allergens. All right, what about ease and cleanliness of disposal, you know, getting rid of the dust? Now, this one isn't surprising, not at all, not to me anyway. With the bagged system, with a bagged vacuum, all you do is you pop out the bag. I'm laughing because in my notes, I misspelled pop. I put an extra O in it, and I'm not going to say it. You guys can do the math, just do the spelling. Pop with an extra O, you can figure out what I said and why I'm laughing. With the bag vacuum, you just pop out the bag and you toss it in the trash, and you're done. No dust clouds, right? It's really easy. That sealed bag keeps things hygienic. You know, it's perfect for allergy-prone households. Bagless vacuums, on the other hand, they're absolutely a crapshoot. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. They're messy. You know, it's an absolute adventure every time you empty one of those things. You pretty much have to take them outside and dump them straight into your outdoor garbage bin. It's a big mess. So in this category, ease and cleanliness of disposal, bag vacuums definitely take the win there. All right, what about suction power and performance? I mean, what good is a vacuum if it doesn't have good suction and performance? All right, bag vacuums, they do a decent job in this regard, and they can maintain strong suction until the bag gets full or starts to fill up. High end, again, that means expensive models with powerful motors, they can stay consistent with the suction power even as the bag fills. But your average middle of the road bag vacuum is going to see suction drop off as that bag fills up. Now, bagless vacuums, you know, cyclone models, they're designed to maintain suction as that bin fills, and they're often marketed as no loss of suction vacuums. You know, they're not going to have a drop off in suction. Now, I don't know how completely true that claim is, because my current bagless vacuum, it really seems to drop off in terms of suction power if the canister is nearing the point of being full. However, it's still better suction than you get with a bagged vacuum that's got a full bag. So here, bagless vacuums have an edge when it comes to consistent suction. But remember, those high-end bagged models, they can hold their own. If you want to drop the money for them, they can hold their own. All right, what about maintenance and upkeep? Well, bag vacuums, there's less hands-on maintenance since the bag really acts as both your filter and your container. All you need to do is swap the bag and you're good to go. Bagless vacuums, you've got to empty that bin more often, and it's dusty, it's messy, and the filters themselves need regular rinsing and drying. That part's a real pain to keep them working to the top of their line, to the top of their abilities. So there's a lot more going on with a bagless vacuum. So when it comes to ease of maintenance and upkeep, bagged vacuums, far simpler. Finally, last thing I want to look at, noise levels, right? Who doesn't love a quieter vacuum? That's what we all would love. You know, as a kid, I would have loved a quieter vacuum so I could have watched I Love Lucy or The Price is Right as Mom vacuumed. you know, without having to crank the volume on the TV. Anyway, bagged vacuums, they're often going to be a little bit quieter because that bag muffles the sound. The bagless vacuums, they've generally got a more powerful motor, and that makes them a little bit louder. So the winner here, if you're looking for quiet, peaceful cleaning, or at least quieter, more peaceful cleaning, the bag systems are going to be a little bit better. All right, final verdict. What's the best choice? Well, bag vacuums are going to be the champs for allergy sufferers, for low maintenance, you know, folks who want low maintenance, and for quieter operation. Bagless vacuums, they're going to shine for modern design. They just look cool. They've got consistent, powerful suction and great versatility. So they're great in busy households, you know, pets, kids, things like that. And also, you know, multiple surfaces. If you're going from hardwoods to carpets and back and forth, you're going to probably have more options and a better way of dealing with that with a bagless system than you would with a bag system. But that's not entirely, you know, straight across the board. Anyway, there you go. Enough about vacuums. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about a few of my favorite things. It's going to be exciting. Stick around.
Cream-colored ponies and crisp apple strudels, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things.
You're listening to the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And as Julie Andrews is suggesting in that opening music, this segment is about some of my favorite things. Here's the deal. Every week or so at home, this has to happen to you too, but every week or so for me, I run into things that I really, really like. You know, I really, really get attached to them. I really get hyper-focused on them. They're not necessarily new and cutting-edge items. They're not even always necessarily items. You know, maybe they're concepts or results of something I've done. It doesn't really matter. The point is that they're things that I've really been focused on for the past few weeks. Things that made a difference in my home, that solved a problem, that made me happy, you name it. Anyway, I run into these things all the time, and I want to talk about them on the show, but they're small. You know, they're little, and it's tough to make a full segment out of them. So I'm going to do this from time to time and just lump a few of them together into a favorite things segment. And let's jump into this one right now. And I want to start with this. One of my favorite things for the past 3 weeks has been, the power pump plunger. I know. Absolutely glamorous, right? But seriously, this thing is great. It's basically, you know, a plunger for your sink. I suppose it could be for a toilet as well, but I've only used it on the sink. But it's a plunger for your sink. But instead of that standard rubber suction cup thing on a handle, you know, with a traditional up and down motion, the plunging motion, this is a suction cup with a pump handle. You know, it almost looks like a bike pump. You put it in the sink, you block the overflow holes, and then you pump the handle. That's it. No plunging, technically. No mess. Just pump it a few times and the clog clears. I've read mixed reviews on these, which is surprising, but you know, it's a whole world of people trying it. So there's definitely mixed reviews out there, but here's what I know. I've used it 3 times in just the past couple of weeks and in 3 different sinks. And each time I had that drain cleared in under 10 effortless pumps. You know, these are not complicated pumps. It's not like a typical plunger. It's so easy. With a household of long-haired girls, you know, long-haired daughters, that's what I've got, this has been a huge help. I've used standard plungers before, plenty of times, and sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes I make it worse. You know, sometimes I dislodge the clog just enough to really lodge it really well so that now I've got to take everything apart and get a pipe snake out to clear things off. But with this thing, that's never happened. I've had solid results every time. I've used it, man, I don't know, 10 different times. Like I said, 3 times in just the past few weeks. And each time, absolutely perfect. And that's why it's earned a spot on my list of favorite things, because I hate plunging things. But with this one, I really don't mind that much. All right, another of my favorite things over the past few weeks has been, my freshly painted ceiling. And yes, I know that sounds ridiculous and dumb, but it's true. I painted the living room ceiling a few weeks ago, and ever since, I find myself staring at it all the time. You know, I'm definitely one of those people that judges the quality of the work I've done on a project by how long I spend sitting in a chair looking at it, right? If I clean the garage, am I out there in a little folding chair looking at the garage? If I'm doing that a lot, that means, ooh, this was good work. This was good stuff. Well, with the ceiling, I'm staring at the ceiling a lot in my living room. The kids think I've passed out, you know, multiple times. I'm just in my chair with my head back and my mouth open, and I'm just in awe at the ceiling. TV's on. I'm not even watching it because I'm looking at my ceiling. You know, it turned out that well. I think there's a number of reasons that I'm so happy with it. I think the first one is that I've dreaded this project for a long time. Did not want to do it. Didn't want to get that out. I didn't know what was going to happen. I had some other problems in the same room. I've talked about them before. Peeling paint on the upper part of the wall, you know, near the ceiling. I had no reason to think the ceiling would be a problem, but still, it felt like bad vibes for me. I didn't want to do this room, but I did it. And I did run into problems on the ceiling. I'll tell you about those in a minute. But even with all of that, the project still went better than I thought it was going to. And I had a lot of stuff lined up that I was convinced was going to go wrong. Still, in the end, easier than I thought. So in that regard, I loved it just because it's done now and I'm just soaking in the glory of a finished project. I love that. But on top of that, it was a huge improvement. Now, I used Benjamin Moore Superhide, which I'd never used before, Superhide in a flat finish, and I was really surprised how easy it was to work with. It's a dead flat finish, and I was able to paint that ceiling in 4x4 square sections and blend it all together with no visual overlaps at all. And really, that is a near miracle, because here's the problem that I ran into, and you'll understand why that was such a miracle in a second. As I'm rolling the paint on the ceiling, I found multiple areas, probably three different areas, one of them really large, where the old paint on the ceiling, which looked like it was adhered well to my ceiling, the minute I hit that with new paint, it was flaking off. I mean, falling to the floor, wet paint falling, you know, the old paint came with it. As I would roll over those areas, more and more and more of the old paint would come off. It was a huge, huge mess. So I've got areas painted, and then I'm up on a ladder trying to scrape off all this paint that I've realized now, the old ceiling paint that isn't adhered well. I'm scraping as much off as I can and trying to re-roll, finding more paint starting to peel, scrape it again, scrape more off, re-roll, all of that while the paint is wet all around me and I'm trying to blend it together. I got the whole thing done, and I was absolutely convinced it was going to need another coat. I was sure I'm going to see all these overlaps because of how horrible that application went. And funny, even though that application was that horrible, it was still better than I was anticipating. So that should let you know how much horribleness I was planning on for that particular room. I guess I just knew. I was picking up the vibe of the room. I knew deep down what was going to happen. Anyway, the ceiling paint blended together. That Superhide from Benjamin Moore completely blended away. I was stunned. I was looking at the before pictures when I was all done. I pulled up these old pictures that I'd taken before I got the paint on there, and I was blown away by how bad that ceiling looked before I put the new coat on. I didn't realize it as we were living with it, but I'm really glad I put that new coat up there before I painted all the walls. I think I would have been really disappointed to get new paint on the walls if I had left that ceiling alone. So anyway, my ceiling, I have been staring at it in awe for the last few weeks. That is one of my favorite things. How about you? Do you have favorite things, favorite tools, favorite projects, favorite anything that you've run into over the last little bit? If so, let me know. I want to know about them. Email radio@repcolite.com, and I'll share them on a future episode. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to dig into my experience with Repcolite's new Deck and Dock water-based deck stain. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Stick around. And we're back. You're listening to the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And last week or so, 2 weeks ago, I had the opportunity to try out a new deck stain from Repcolite. It's called Deck and Dock Waterborne, and I talked about it briefly on the show a couple weeks ago. But this week, I want to dig into the product a little more deeply because it's really, really a great product. I loved working with it, but there definitely are some things that you're going to need to know to determine if this is something that you want or if it's something that you should be working with. I'll get to all of that in a little bit. All right, the original oil-based version of Deck and Dock You've probably, at least a bunch of you have used that in the past. It's kind of been our standard for decks for a long time at Repco Light. A lot of condo associations use it, contractors, like I said, homeowners for decades in West Michigan have been using that. And now, as of last year, last summer, basically, I think is when it came about, as of then, we've got a new water-based version that we're offering. And I think it's my favorite deck coating. I think it's the best, but I do have some caveats, and we're going to get to all of that. All right, the color that I chose was butternut. It's a deep, rich brown. That looks great. There are a few other colors that I could have chosen from, but butternut, that's the darkest one, and that's what I wanted. Now, over the years, because I do the show, I've used a ton of different deck products on the deck, and every time that I've done it, usually by the time I finish it up and wrap it all up, I think it looks great. You know, no matter what I've used, the deck looks way better than it had looked. And usually I'm pretty happy. But usually, as a few hours go by, in some instances, the deck stain becomes duller and duller. And I'm not joking about that hours thing. The oil-based Deck and Dock, you know, the standard product that Repco Light sells, it's been used all over the place for years and years. When it goes on, it's oil-based. It's got a little bit of a sheen because the stain is actually a little bit wet. And that sheen just gives it this richness and this depth and this beauty. And you're amazed at it. And you can't take your eyes off of it, but then it dries. And that sheen, that depth kind of fades out a little bit. The product's still great. It holds up wonderfully. And it looks good. But you lost that little bit of that beautiful furniture finish that it had when it was wet. Sometimes within just a few hours. And that's what normally happens. I get it on, looks great, dries out completely, and now that richness goes away. Well, in this case, with the Deck and Dock Waterborne product, that sheen has lasted. It doesn't fade out nearly as quickly. Most likely, I'm thinking by the end of summer, that sheen might be dulled down. I'm thinking for sure by next spring, if I want that sheen back, I'll probably need to redo it. But right now, you know, it's been about 2 to 3 weeks or so since I did it. And still, that deck has a finished look. It looks like furniture. There's no other way to say it. It's absolutely beautiful. You know, and my deck boards are not in good shape. If you remember a couple weeks ago, I talked about that. They're old. They're worn in places. I had a lot of rot in a couple places that I sanded down through. It did not look good prior to staining. But now I put this Deck and Dock Waterborne product on there. I've got this sheen. Almost looks like furniture. It's rich. It's beautiful. And that sheen has lasted. I can't be happier with how it looks. On top of that, the water-based cleanup was absolutely brilliant. Of course it was. You know, it was water-based products. So no mineral spirits, no gloves that I had to wear. I could have worn gloves, but I didn't need to because I could wash up easily. I had no messy, sticky hands to deal with. No throwing away brushes. You know, I don't know how many times I've thrown away the big stain brushes because I just don't want to labor through cleaning those out with mineral spirits. And now I can wash it all out easily in the sink. You know, the tray, everything I used could be washed up easily in the sink and put away again, and I can use it again next year. So that's a second happy thing that I got from this. First off, this beautiful furniture finish on my deck. I mean, it's the holy grail of what people want on their decks, and I've got that right now with Deck and Dock Waterborne. So that's great. Second thing, easy cleanup. A third happy result was the speed at which that deck dried and was ready for use. It was absolutely amazing. And to be clear, I'd recommend giving it hours before getting on it. Now, because I'm me and my goal was to put the product through its paces, I was standing on the deck within less than an hour. And even that's a stretch, really, to be honest. I was on it in more like 30 minutes. It was possibly even less than 30 minutes, you know, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, something like that. Should you do that? Should you stain your deck and then walk all over it in 20 minutes? No, don't do that. Absolutely don't do that. But if you give it a few hours, it should be fine. And that part of the product is great. You know, no more letting it sit overnight or for a couple days. My kid is an exterior painter and, you know, he's doing a bunch of condos and they were just at a house and he was telling me about it that a different crew had come through, you know, somebody not using any of the products that I carry, and they did the decks there. And those people told my kid and the crew that he was on that they need to stay off of that deck for 48 hours. It's got to dry for 48 hours before they can get on it. And he was asking me about that. And I said, I don't know what they put down. But whatever they put down, the crew was on it within, you know, after 48 hours, you know, 3 days later, they're on it. And it was still experiencing trouble, you know, as they walked across it. So there's a lot of products out there that are going to require a long wait before you can put it back to use. This is not one of them. The Deck and Dock Waterborne product, I was walking on mine in about 20 to 30 minutes. Again, don't do that. Give it a couple hours. But even with a couple hours, you are miles ahead of most other products out there. So all of those things are really, really positive. But there is a catch. You know, as I mentioned, it dries quickly. And I'm talking crazy fast dry times, at least in my situation. And I was applying it in early May. Now, when I say all of that, that it dried fast, a lot of people hear that as a positive. And it is. I just talked about it. It is a positive. It's nice to be able to get on it quicker. But as I mentioned on the show, if you listen to the deck, you know, the show about decks a couple weeks ago, I mentioned that fast dry times make application trickier. You know, I ended up, as I was putting it down, I had to adjust my application methods to make sure that I got the results I needed. So, for instance, whereas I typically would work with a partner and I'd have somebody roll the oil-based coating onto the deck, you know, maybe a couple boards at a time ahead of me, and then I'd follow behind with a brush, you know, and work it into the wood. Well, that's how I'd normally do it. In this instance, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that with Deck and Dock Waterborne because it was drying just way too fast, ridiculously fast. So I had to go to brushing it straight out of the can. Now, that sounds horrible, but as I mentioned, again, a couple weeks ago, if you're going to do a deck project, go to the archives, go to repcolite.com, click the On the Radio tab, click the archive shows or, you know, all the different collected shows, and then find the episode on decks. I did a whole episode walking you through everything you need to know. If a deck project's in your future, go check that out. And within that episode, I mentioned that there's a stain brush that's absolutely brilliant for decks. It's that same stain brush that I talked about earlier that when I'd use it with oil-based products, I'd just throw it away. You know, and it's not inexpensive. It's not terrible, but it was always sad to throw it away. Now I can clean it and keep it for the next project. Anyway, it's called the Bravo Stain Brush from Wooster. There's a 4-inch version. There's a 4.75-inch version, I think. And what makes it really cool, besides the fact that it holds a ton of product, is that the handle will screw off. So you can unthread the little handle that it comes with, and you can thread on an extension pole, you know, like the same kind of extension pole you'd use for a push broom in your garage. So basically, you can stand up and stain your deck, you know, by brushing. So it's wonderful. So when I say that I had to apply the stain by brush, you know, right out of the can, it's not what you're picturing. I was standing up. It's really not that big of a deal. It moves pretty fast. So anyway, with Deck and Dock Waterborne, I switched to that method because it was the only way to get the product on fast enough without it starting to drag a little bit or stick as I was brushing it. So that was a little bit of a negative. Once I adjusted to that, it went on beautifully, no problems. So you do have to keep that in mind. Now, if you're thinking about trying Deck and Dock Waterborne, and I'm sure some of you are because, and you should be, because that furniture finish, it really is absolutely something to see. But if you're going to try it, or if you're thinking about trying it, I'd recommend a few things to help you with the application. First off, get that Wooster Bravo stain brush that I just talked about and an extension pole. And right now, until Monday, June 16, through Monday, June 16, that brush is on sale. And so is Deck and Dock Waterborne. I'll give you more info on that in a little bit. But that brush is on sale right now through June 16. So come in and get it now or then, you know, before that sale is over. So get that brush, get an extension pole, and apply it that way, straight out of the can. That's first. Secondly, work on a cool day and work in the shade if possible. You know, if your deck is in full sun and the only time you can do it is in the heat of summer, you know, as the weather's starting to heat up a little bit, then you probably don't want to use Deck and Dock Waterborne or really any water-based stain at that point. If you can only work in full sun and in the heat of summer, go with an oil-based deck stain because it's going to stay wet longer and it's going to soak into the boards even in the heat. But if you can work in the shade and in cooler temps, Deck and Dock Waterborne is going to give you a beautiful look. Now, the last thing I'd say before wrapping it all up is it's on sale. I mentioned that already, but it's on sale until, or I guess I should say through Monday, June 16 at all RepcoLite locations. The oil-based version of Deck and Dock is on sale as well. And the savings for this particular sale are really, really big. You can get the water-based Deck and Dock for $29 a gallon, which is a savings of $15 per gallon. And we've got the oil-based Deck and Dock on sale for $35 a gallon, which is a savings of $28 per gallon. So $35 for the oil base, $29 for the water base Deck and Dock, and again, savings from $15 all the way up to almost $30. So huge savings. Now's the time to do it if you've got a deck project coming up. So Deck and Dock Waterborne. Really, when I think about it, it's my favorite deck product that I've ever used up to this point anyway. I don't know what the future holds, but so far, it's absolutely the best coating I've ever put on the deck. It's the best stain I've ever used. I'm happier with it than I've ever been. So definitely think about it. Check it out. Remember, like I said, that sheen look is going to fade over time, and you'll still be redoing this product every year to year and a half. It's just like any other deck product. This is not a miracle, you know, silver bullet that you put it on and now you don't need to touch it again for 3 years. We talked about that on the show a few weeks ago. Those things are false. It's false advertising in Michigan. Deck products will not last that long, period. This is just like all deck products. You're going to need to maintain it every year to year and a half. But I've tried a lot of deck products, and by far, this is the best looking one so far. So definitely think about it. Definitely swing out to any RepcoLite. Look at some samples. Check it out. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about front doors. How do you get the right color for your front door? Not make a big mistake, not make the neighbors laugh at you, not annoy the neighbors. How do you pull it all off? We'll get to that in just a little bit. Stick around. And we're back. You're listening to the RepcoLite Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And here's a question that we get all the time. What's the best color for my front door? That sounds simple. Sounds like an easy question, something that experts like us could handle with no problem. But it's actually a little bit tricky because the truth is there's no, you know, one size fits all answer to this. There's no magical best color that works for every single home. You know, instead, the best color for your front door is going to be one that doesn't distract or clash with your home's architecture. You know, it's a color that complements the style of the home, something that works with the overall look, not against it. So with all of that said, let's talk about a few things that are popular, you know, some popular colors, and then we'll get into some deeper stuff. We'll get into the weeds on it a little bit. All right, popular colors. If you're curious about trends, here's what people are generally doing. Red is classic. You know, it's timeless, works on everything from traditional colonials to modern farmhouses. So red generally always works well. Black and charcoal, they're huge right now. And you're definitely going to see a lot of navy blues and deep greens out there too. You know, they're rich, they're elegant, they pair nicely with a wide range of exterior colors. But, and this is a big but, if you're asking what's the most popular front door color, you're probably asking the wrong question. You know, you're looking at it from the wrong point of view. Because if you're chasing what's trendy, and this is the case with interior stuff too, but if you're chasing what's trendy, you're setting yourself up for disappointment, or at least a kind of a boring result. You know, instead, the better question to ask is this: what color reflects my personality better? And don't be afraid of doing something unique, especially on a front door. If you love pastel green or maybe something coral or who knows what, if that's your color, go for it. You know, make it yours. Now, the front door is a small part of your home's exterior. It's a great place to experiment. And, you know, even though it's a small area, because it's the focal point of it's really the focal point of your exterior. It's what all of our eyes are naturally drawn to is front doors. We all know that's true. Because of that, it really makes a powerful statement about your exterior. You know, it really lends itself towards amping up your curb appeal. It helps create a great first impression. So a good color choice can really enhance the architectural features of your home. It can add personality. It can even affect how people perceive the value of your home. So if you're trying to pick the right color, you know, it's important. Let's get it right. Here are some things to consider. You know, here's where we're going to get into the weeds a little bit and give you a little more practical, actionable intel. First off, think about the style of your home. You know, if you've got a traditional colonial house, colors like deep reds, navy blues, blacks, they tend to work beautifully. If you're in a modern home, try something bold. You know, who knows what that could be? Maybe teal, bright yellow, you know, a deep orange, a coral color. Who knows? It all depends on some of the other things that we'll talk about, but go for something a little bit bold. If you've got a cozy cottage, maybe a farmhouse, pastels, you know, they work. Sage greens, powder blues, they can all be perfect. All right, so that's the first thing to think about, the style of your home. Next, look at the other colors on your exterior, all right? This is not rocket science here. Of course, you've got to do that. What color is your siding, your trim, your roof? Don't forget about the roof. The front door color should either complement those or offer, you know, a tasteful contrast, For example, a red door on gray siding. That works really, really well. A navy blue door with white trim. That feels classic and clean. So keep in mind all the other colors on your exterior. And if you've got perennials and flowers like that that come up every single year with the same color tones, don't forget to take those into consideration as well. All right, third thing, think about the mood that you want to set. You know, what mood do you want your home or your front door to exude? You know, colors definitely play into this. You know, color psychology is a real thing. Reds are all about energy and confidence. Blues, they feel calm, you know, steady, rock solid, you know, peaceful. Green, that gives a sense of balance and harmony. You know, it's got real natural tones, natural inclinations, you know, just the peace of nature. Yellow, it's cheerful, it's optimistic. It's not going to be anywhere near my home, that's for sure. No, that's not even true because I've painted entire rooms yellow because I'm entirely in, you know, completely cheerful and I'm 100% optimistic. So think about that. Black, it adds elegance and sophistication. White, it's clean, timeless, it's simple. So bottom line with this point, if there's a mood or an atmosphere that you're trying to create, find a color that will help you accomplish that. All right, finally, last thing to keep in mind here is keep your neighborhood in mind. You know, your house should express you, that's true, but it's really worth considering the vibe of the neighborhood too. You know, if you're planning to sell, a color that fits in even while standing out a little bit might help boost your curb appeal. And one other thing to think about when you're considering the neighborhood is this, and I think this is one of the more important things that I'm saying, and I see this mistake happen all the time. If somebody three houses down from you picked the absolute perfect color, you know, the most perfect color in the whole wide world, you drove home one day, saw it on the door, and boom, the lights went off. That's the color. That's what you've looked for all your life. If you found it three houses down from you, don't steal it. That's not cool. There are still a million other colors you can go out there and find, and many of those are going to be the perfect color too. Go and find one of those and let those people three houses down from you live in the glory of their choice. All right, we see people all the time swipe the front door color from houses just down the road, and yeah, things get dicey in the neighborhood when that happens sometimes, so keep that in mind. All right, some practical things to keep in mind as we wrap this up. First off, stretch outside your comfort zone. You know, a typical door is only going to need about a quart of paint. Painting it is only going to probably take you a small portion of your day. And because it's a cheap project and an easy one, it's the perfect project for experimenting with color. You know, if it's not right, that's not fun, but repainting it isn't that big of a deal. But you might find, by stretching outside your comfort zone, you might find that you've really hit it out of the park with your color choice. So stretch outside your comfort zone. Second, get the right paint. Benjamin Moore's Aura and Repco Lights Endura, they're both excellent choices. They'll clean up with soap and water and they'll hold up for years to come. Last thing, test your color with Benjamin Moore's Color Portfolio app. It's a free app. You can take a picture of your front door and then you can try out all of the Benjamin Moore colors you want on the front door. It's really, really cool. It works really, really well. Super easy. You'll get a great view of what each color is going to look like. That's the Benjamin Moore Color Portfolio app. So check that out. All right, bottom line, pick a color that makes you happy when you pull in the driveway. That's what you're after. And if you do run stuck, remember, you can stop out at any Repco Light and we'll help. All right, that's all the time we've got. We're going to wrap it up. But before I do that officially, I want to remind you that our Deck and Dock waterborne product, the product that I talked about last segment, and the Deck and Dock oil-based product, the old standby, both of those are on sale, significant sales through June 16, so through Monday yet. If you've got a deck project coming up, now's the time to act on it. You can save up to almost $30 per gallon for the oil base and over $15 a gallon for the water-based products. So definitely check that out. and take advantage of that sale before it wraps up. All right, whatever you do today, make sure paint's a part of it. And remember, the next project you tackle is easier than you think. Have a great weekend, everybody. Have a great Father's Day to all you fathers out there. And I'll see you next week. I'm Dan Hansen. Thanks for listening.